We're in the section now where Solomon begins the construction of the temple. So 1 Kings chapter 6, the beginning of the chapter gives us a date. It was in the fourth year of Solomon that he began the construction on the temple and so forth. So that kind of gives us a date to work backwards and forwards. And that's been correlated with 966 BC, correlating Bible history and world history. So that gives us a pretty good working spot. All right, last week we talked about some of the places from which Solomon sourced materials. We talked about the cedars of Lebanon. There were cedars and there were, fir trees. And fir trees are what we would call cypress, but they're cedars and cypress. And, some of those, the cedars of Lebanon were legendary. I mean, it would be, kind of what we would think of with the sequoias out west or things like that, very large trees. And he had masons to hew stone. And they were cutting out large sections of stone there. And that was going on. We sometimes think, all right, well, that was all of the materials for the temple. This morning we're going to talk about the fact that wasn't all the building material that were used. But the temple dimensions, and this is kind of where we left off last time, but the size of the temple for that day was pretty large. But it's for our day, we would think of it as relatively modest. The temple building itself is about half as wide as this auditorium. This auditorium is about 58 to 60 feet wide. The temple's 30 feet wide, so it's about half as wide as this. Now, it was almost twice as tall. That ceiling's about 18 feet, and it was 30 feet tall. And then the total was 90 feet. You had 60 feet for the main part and 30 feet for the Holy of Holies. But for a rough estimate, from the front of the platform here until the back wall of the foyer, okay, roughly that would be about the size of it. So you think, wow, okay, that a lot of times we would picture it much larger, but everything was done by hand. Everything was done by hand and animal. There wasn't any mechanical power that was, that was involved in that. But within that, there was a tremendous amount of effort and a tremendous amount of preparation and expense. In 1 Kings chapter 6, we have a description, beginning in verse number 2. We have the dimensions, and we have the description, verse 2. Solomon built for the Lord, the length thereof was three score cubits, the breadth 20, the height 30. Verse 3, the porch before the temple was 20 cubits was the length according to the breadth of the house. 10 cubits was the breadth before the house. So the building's 20 cubits wide, and the porch was the same width as the house. The other 10 cubits is how far out it extended in front of the building. Now, the interesting part comes here. There's no description given of the height of that porch. But hold your finger here and turn over to 2 Chronicles chapter 3 with me. 2 Chronicles chapter 3 and verse number 4, the porch. I hear pages turning. I'll give you another minute. I knew where I was going, so I got there, had a head start. 2 Chronicles 3, verse 4, the porch that was in front of the house, the length was according to the breadth, 20 cubits, so same width as the house, and the height, 120. Now, what was the height of the building itself? Yeah, it was 30 cubits, or 30 feet, right? So 120 cubits is significantly taller than the house. So really, to picture it, you need to think more like a tower next to the building almost. Something very tall that would draw attention. Now, it's very, very interesting to me, of all the Bible dictionaries or commentators that I tried to look at, how many of them tried to explain why 2 Chronicles 3 and verse 4 was a mistake and why it couldn't be that way. I will just take it at face value, okay? But what that means is the porch was in no way proportional or closely proportional to the house. It would stand up very tall and very much draw attention to the house. So you have the, back to 1 Kings chapter 6, you have the rest of the description of the exterior. I want to skim through the description and then try to look at some pictures so we'll have kind of a basis to go on. verse 4, for the house he made windows of narrow lights. Okay, so they were like skinny and tall would be the idea there. Verse 5, against the wall of the house he built chambers round about. Against the wall of the house, both of the temple and of the oracle, and he made chambers round about. So that would be chambers on the outside. Okay, not visible from the inside, but these were chambers where that the priests would use. These are places where the offerings would be stored and things like that. Verse 6, the nethermost, nether meaning lower, chamber was 5 cubits broad, and the middle was 6, and the third was 7. So it seems, you know, they were getting a little bit wider, and I think there is a an explanation for that. Now notice, in the middle of verse 6, for without in the wall of the house he made narrowed rests round about, that the beams should not be fastened in the walls of the house. And the house, when it was in the building, was built of stone made ready before it brought thither, so there was neither hammer nor axe nor any tool of iron heard in the house while it was in the building. Well, that's just impressive, isn't it? Okay, you've heard the expression, measure twice, cut once. I measure twice, cut once. It doesn't fit. Measure twice again, cut again, still doesn't fit. Measure twice, cut again, now it's too short. You know, that is very, very impressive to me that they could fit these things to the point where it just dropped in exactly the way that it was supposed to. Now, granted, Solomon had the resources to hire the skilled workmen, and he wasn't on a time crunch, and he didn't have to deal with inspectors. So, you know, he had some advantages that we may not have. Verse number 8, the door for the middle chamber was in the right side of the house, and they went up with winding stairs into the middle chamber and out into the third. What is that talking about? That's talking about the chambers that were on the outside. So it was a staircase to access the chambers along the outside. Verse 9, so he built the house and finished it and covered the house with beams and boards of cedar. Then he built chambers against the house 5 cubits high. All right, now, the interesting phrase to me in this part here is actually in verse number 6. It says, he made narrow rests round about that the beams should not be fastened in the walls of the house. When you see pictures, what you see is the exterior. But what it seems like from this description is that the walls were made of hewn rock. And then outside and inside were both covered. The inside, when we look at that description, we're going to see the inside was all covered with wood and then overlaid with gold. But the stones were the primary strength of the structure. But here when it says there were no boards fastened in the walls, this is what I think that means. I think that the bottom layer, on the inside, it would be flush. So it would be straight or relatively straight, just like that wall. Okay, on the inside, it would be straight, so it would be almost, you know, a rectangle. But on the outside, I think the stones kind of step down, just like you'd have here on the platform. So the bottom stone was this wide, and then the second layer was a little bit less, and the third layer was a little bit less. This side would be even, but that would be steps. All right, well then, when they were going to set the beams for those chambers on the outside, they could set the beam right on here. And it didn't have to go inside the wall, but it had a nice ledge of stone to rest on. And then, which is why the bottom chamber was 5 cubits, and then the middle layer was 6, and the top layer was 7. I think that's because the stones were kind of stepping down a little bit, and so you had a cubit there for the beams to rest on. But from the outside, it would look even, and on the inside, you know, it would be squared off. Notice in verse number 10, verse 9, he covered the house with beams and boards of cedar. So cedar on the outside, and then verse 10 where it says they rested on the house with timber of cedar. That's what I'm describing with the chambers. All right, then in verses 14 through 36, you have a description of the interior. We got the measurements of that. Verse number 15, he built the walls with the boards of cedar, both the floor and the walls of the ceiling, and he covered them on the inside with wood and covered the floor of the house with planks of fir. And he built 20 cubits on the side of the house, floor and walls and boards. Can you imagine this? You ever been in a large room that's all, like today we might use oak, you know, oak paneling, right? But you ever been in some place that's all covered in wood? Like, wow, this was a lot of time, a lot of expense. It's really nice. But this wasn't enough to just cover the whole thing in wood. Now, I'm not talking about 1970s paneling, okay? Most of us are doing everything we can to get rid of that. Paint it, tear it out, replace it with something else, whatever. I'm not talking about, this was the real thing. But this was not just wood planking. Verse number 18, the cedar of the house within was carved with knops and open flowers. So the knops being, you know, the flares that you would have on the stem of flowers, and then open flowers. Now, Mrs. Stevens is pretty good at making little flowers out of, I think it's Wendy's spoons, right? I've seen some of those. She has a way of making that, making a little flower. I can't even do that. Okay, but she can heat it and make it curl, and you know, it looks pretty nice. Maybe some of you can make them out of paper. My best option would be Hobby Lobby and try to buy something, okay? But imagine the skill to carve that, right? This was an open flower, so it was, you know, bloomed out, not just a bud, but bloomed out, carved into wood. So it's flat on the backside where they can attach it to the wall, and then carved wood. All over. You had carved knops with open flowers. Verse 18, all was cedar. There was no stone seen. So you got the stone walls that would be the structure, but then it was all paneled with wood and it was all carved. Verse 19, the oracle he prepared in the house within. The oracle refers to the place where they would go to inquire of the Lord. That would refer to what we would call the Holy of Holies. To set there in the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, the oracle in the forepart was 20 cubits in length, 20 cubits in breadth, 20 cubits in height. So the Holy of Holies was, again, like a cube, 20, 20, 20. The main house was 30 high. The Holy of Holies was 20 cubits high. So it was a little bit of a drop at the end. I'm going to show you some pictures of this in a minute. Verse 21, Solomon overlaid the house within with pure gold. And he made a partition by the chains of gold before the oracle. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Chains of gold. I mean, you ever remember having to deal with, I mean, you younger kids probably not, but the adults may remember having to deal with in certain places, you got all these strings of beads hanging in the doorway. You got to part them to go through, okay? I mean, imagine that with pure gold chains. I don't know, that how he made a partition of chains. Maybe it was something like that. Okay, verse 22, the whole house he overlaid with gold until he'd finished all the house, also the whole altar. Verse 23, within the oracle he made two cherubims of olive tree, each 10 cubits high. How high is 10 cubits? 15 feet. Okay, so those cherubim would have been about 3 feet shy of the ceiling here. Okay, and again, 10 feet wide. Now I've seen two different depictions of this. One was just more like angels with wings outstretched. The other one is more like some of the characters from Ezekiel or Revelation. It's like the face of a man and the body of a lion with wings like an angel kind of thing. Whatever it was, there were two of them. So the one was 10 cubits, so it would touch the side wall and come to about the middle. And then the second one would touch in the middle and come to the side wall on this side and 15 feet high. Imagine, where do you get the wood to carve something like that, right? He carved it and then overlaid it with gold. Now, this was made out of olive tree, so it wasn't like one cedar of Lebanon that was carved into this. Let me see here. Verse number 29. He carved all the walls of the house round about with carved figures of cherubims and palm trees and open flowers within and without. So we talked about the knops and the flowers a few minutes ago. But there were angels carved into the walls, the cherubim, and flowers, and palm trees. No electric routers, no programmable equipment. All of this was done by hand. That's some incredible skill, is it not? And, you know, some incredible patience and amount of time. What was this reminiscent of? Okay, this was, I think, reminiscent of the tabernacle. Now, in the tabernacle, you had boards that formed the walls that were overlaid with gold. But when you looked up, you would see that first layer of covering that was blue and scarlet and gold. and purple, and all of that were cherubims and all of you. So you'd kind of see that. I think all of that is reminiscent of the descriptions we see of God's throne in the Bible, where the angels surround the throne of God. You have the cherubim over the ark spreading their wings forward, just like the description in Isaiah and Ezekiel of the throne of God. And again, over the ark of the covenant, you're going to have the cherubim with the wings extended and so forth. But this expanded in Solomon's temple to where this was carved on the walls and everything too. Tremendously ornate. Okay, verse number 30, the floor of the house he overlaid with gold. Verse 31, in the entering of the oracle he made doors of olive tree. The lintel and the side posts were a fifth part of the wall. So what is that? 20% of the space was doors. So if it's, 30 feet wide, then that would be what, 6 feet? So verse 32, the two doors were of olive tree, and he carved upon them carvings of cherubim, palm trees, open flowers, and overlaid them with gold, and spread gold on the cherubims and the palm trees. Now, I marvel at the ability to carve those things and have it be recognizable. But then, how do you overlay that with gold and get it to be nice and smooth? I mean, you're overlaying wood. Okay, there's a tremendous amount of metalworking and woodworking skill that went into the construction of this. Okay, verse 35, he carved the leaves of the door were fur. He carved thereon cherubims and palm trees and open flowers and covered them with gold fitted on the carved work. And he built the inner court with three rows of hewed stone and a row of cedar beams. All right, so the very ornate description here. All right, now, I've got some pictures here, but while I do this, I've got a couple of men that have some handouts. If you guys would go ahead and start passing those around. I have two or three different, I should have enough for one per person here. If not, maybe, husband and wife get along well enough to share, or maybe the young people with better eyes can let the adults have, their own individual copy so they can see it. But what I wanted to show you here is that if you look at three artist renderings, you're going to see two or three different variations. This is one artist rendering. Here's a slightly different look here, kind of a cutaway view, and then there's the wall, but then this is the one that I've given you, okay? So what I want you to see is don't just say, all right, this has to be it. This is the only way it could have possibly been. There are different, but this rendering here, you see in different places that there were two pillars on either side of the porch, and he named them. That's what Jacob and Boaz represent here. And then you have an altar there. You have the molten sea depicted. I don't know how far I can zoom in on that, but you can see the oxen there. The sea was just an enormous basin that they would put the drink offerings of the people and so forth in. But so that's an outside view, and you see the lower levels around the outside. When we skim through the descriptions, if you'd go back and read it in a little more detail, you'd see that the chambers on the outside were about 20 cubits high. The house was 30 cubits high. So what that means is right here, where if you can see where I've got my red dot right here, these high windows here would let light in directly into the sanctuary. Okay? The others would be the priest's chambers, around the outside, the treasuries and so forth. So again, that's one rendering with, here's kind of a cutaway view. Inside of that, you'd have the table of showbread, the lampstand, the altar of incense, a similar layout to the tabernacle, and then the Holy of Holies. Now here, if you can tell what that is, the cherubim here are represented kind of like the creatures from Ezekiel, kind of a lion-ish type shape with the wings of an angel and so forth. But that's one representation there. All right, let me see here. I've got to learn how to operate the technology. There we go. All right, now let's move on to this one. This picture here represents the wall on the lower side. Remember we said this was located on Mount Moriah? And it was on a mountain, so it wasn't all flat and level. They had to do some groundwork to prepare things. Well, on the, I don't remember now, I should have written it down. I think it was the southwest corner. But on one of the corners, it kind of drops off significantly. So this was a representation, the wall from the ground level up to the top of the wall here at this point was something like either 90 feet or 90 cubits, right? Which is why when you think of it in terms of this, then you put that extremely tall porch on the front of the temple. Well, then no matter what direction you're coming from, you can see it, right? Now, right now, I'm greatly envious of those that have been to Israel and can kind of visualize this and not, you know, just go from pictures. But, you know, the pictures help us a lot more than just reading the words, right? Now, this would be one corner of the wall there where, you know, folks would access in and out to part of the temple area. Now, this is a screenshot of the handout that you have. And what you see here in the handout in the lower left here would be the altar. Now, this would be significantly larger than the altar that they had at the tabernacle, which was more portable. The brazen sea there would hold thousands and thousands of gallons of liquid, okay? Now, it kind of looks like gold. We know that number three there, that was made of brass and so forth, but this is just a representation. Now, I don't think that this representation is completely accurate. This one is based, you know, the porch is at 20 cubits instead of 30. That's what a lot of the people that say 2 Chronicles chapter 3 is incorrect say it should be 20 instead of 120. Okay, so it's you know, a little bit more like that. But anyway, the right-hand side here kind of gives you an artist's rendering of what it might have looked like inside the temple, all right? The top level here, these would be it said narrow lights, so kind of tall and narrow windows. And there was a kind of a fixed grate over them. It was high enough, and the way it was built, they didn't get the same kind of rain there that we do all the time as far as blowing storms and stuff like that. But if you see how it's represented from left to right there, kind of the beam, what direction did the temple face? East, okay? So the morning light would shine right through the windows and right towards where the altar of incense would be and so forth. Can you picture what it would be like when the light comes through the windows? You get the daylight coming through the windows and everything is overlaid with gold. That would be bright, wouldn't it? Okay, we picture it, you know, in our own way or, you know, in our own imagination, but that would be, you know, extremely bright. Well, you see, this again is an artist's rendering of what it may have looked like with the palm trees and cherubim and, you know, flowers and stuff. If you look at three different pictures, you have four or five different artist renderings of, you know, what these things may have looked like. But nonetheless, this just kind of gives us something to hang our hat on, all right? I would much rather have something like this than just totally try to guess. But if you turn that over to the other side then, on the back side of the page, that would be a representation of the back end of the house and the Holy of Holies. Again, if I go to the next slide here, you can see how the Holy of Holies is represented as being shorter than the rest of the house. The Holy of Holies is described as 20 by 20 by 20, so a cube, a little smaller section. Here, again, the cherubim are represented as those kind of like the creatures from Ezekiel, not necessarily the body and face of a man, but those cherubim would have touched, you know, wing to wing, you know, wing to middle, and then middle to edge, and then right in the middle, underneath the two touching wings, would have been the placement for the Ark of the Covenant. Okay, the backside here, number 12, on the far right of this illustration, illustrates what they sometimes called the treasuries, where the tithes and offerings and things that were brought, the supplies that were needed, or the offerings for the house of God, those would be stored often there. Now, there were other things that were built around the courtyard as well. I'll show you another illustration of that in a minute. But how many times do you remember, hopefully you remember, but how many times is it said in the Kings and Chronicles and all the times with Israel's in and out of captivity, how many times did a foreign king come in and demand payment or else, and they went to the treasury of the house of God and took the money, right? This is, when you look at the building like this, it kind of helps you to understand how at one point in time it says that one of the kings, to get the demanded ransom payment, in other words, to get the demanded tax payment, went and cut all the gold off of the doors of Solomon's temple. Okay, this would have been, you know, a massive storehouse, a massive value here, and no doubt it was a target anytime people came against Israel. Why was it so ornate? Whose house was it to represent? God's house. And for us, this is as ornate and expensive as it gets. But lest, you know, we get too impressed with it, it was built out of heaven's pavement, right? So, but the entire thing, inside, outside, all you had the stone walls, and then all of that was cedar lined, and all of that was carved, and every bit of that was overlaid with gold. Floors, walls, ceilings, everything is overlaid with gold. You know, tremendously ornate. The porch, the pillars, I believe, were brass. A tremendous amount of building materials and expense. Now, all right, I did it again. I need to get to one of these college students to tutor me how to use the technology here. All right, now this is a rendering of Herod's temple, an artist's rendering of Herod's temple. You can see this one is built, at least with the porch, taller than the main house. You know, it's not quite as extensive, but this is an artist's rendering of Herod's temple. But what you see back here in the background would represent, you know, other chambers and treasuries and storehouses. You know, over time, the amount of storage that they needed to hold the offerings, whether it was grain or gold or whatever, those storage chambers would increase. It's no different in that day than it is in our day, right? The amount of stuff that you have to store is directly proportional to the amount of closet and attic space that you have. Right? If you have space, it will get filled up with something. It's just the way it goes. Okay? But you have the rebuilt temple in the time of Christ. That was the one that Herod rebuilt. Okay? So the house that Solomon built, I didn't want to necessarily move that. Let's see if I can operate this. I need a license here. I have to remedial. So this house here, the house of Solomon, lasted for approximately how long? All right, when was everything, you know, all the vessels of the house of God were carried away captive? What king did that? Carried the vessels away and then they used them, you know, in his own house. And while they were using the vessels from this house, the hand shows up on the wall and starts writing. Where was that? It's Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon. Okay, so Babylon, it was in three phases, right? But the final phase of that captivity, when they destroyed the temple, destroyed the walls, carried away everything to Babylon, that's 586 BC. All right, we said 966 is when Solomon started building this thing. 586 is when it was destroyed. So approximately how long did this temple last? 400 years. Okay, now it was modified, things were stolen from it, you know, borrowed, whatever. They borrowed out of this, stole things out of it to pay. But the final, so this temple in Solomon's mind was made to be a permanent house of God. It lasted just a little less than 400 years. The most, you know, ornate temple for the true God, you know, that's ever been built. But that's what you have here, you know, with the temple. All right. So that the handout, you can take it, you can look at it. Just don't, you know, make all your doctrinal statement based off of that artist's rendering, okay? This is just a visual to kind of help us get a mental picture, but not everything about this is necessarily 100% accurate, but it is extremely helpful, I think, to visualize what was going on. So where did all that come from? Well, any questions or comments on that, on the building before we move on? All right, where did this all come from? All right, let's talk about, oh, let me show you this real quick. Last week when we started talking about the temple, Brother Jeremy Lockhart came to me and he said, when I described the dimensions of the temple, he said, whoa, this, he was very familiar with one that they were building in Sao Paulo, Brazil. This is actually an artist's rendering of it, very much modeled after Herod's temple. This is an actual overhead shot at night of a recreation in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Now, he said, man, based on what you're saying, the one they built in Brazil is grossly out of scale. This building here in Brazil, let me see if I can find it here real quick. I know I wrote it down. It's 180 feet high, so the porch actually would be the same height as what's described in 2 Chronicles. But it's 413 feet long and 340 wide. This replica here has 10,000 seats inside of it. Okay, this was built by the if I can say it this right, the Universal Church of the Kingdom of God, which is a Pentecostal church that's huge in Brazil. This is their world headquarters for their denomination and such. I thought about maybe showing a YouTube clip until I realized the entire thing is like 2.5 hours. Okay, there is an inauguration service for this thing that's 2.5 hours long. Orchestra music. They have men carrying a replica of the Ark of the Covenant with poles on the side marching in. It's covered with a blue cloth, and then they pull the cloth off so everybody can see it. You know, it's very ornate, but that one is grossly out of scale. If it'd seat 10,000 people, it was not the same scale. And I think they acknowledge it's a larger scale, but not an exact replica. Okay, but where did all that come from? Okay, the duration of the construction. Oh, I didn't put that on there, did I? All right, so let's go back here. Let me go back to this. Where did all of that gold come from? Now, we tend to think sometimes, all right, Solomon, you know, it took him a few years to get things together, and it did. It was the fourth year of his reign before he started, but, you know, turn with me, if you would, to 1 Chronicles 22. 1 Chronicles 22. First Chronicles chapter 22, then David said, this is the house of the Lord God, and this is the altar for the burnt offering. And David commanded to gather together the strangers that were in the land of Israel, and he set masons to hew wrought stones to build the house of God. So David didn't just say, oh, well, God's not going to let me build it, so I'm just going to twiddle my thumbs. David began to prepare. Verse 3, David prepared iron in abundance for the nails for the doors of the gates and the joinings, and brass in abundance without weight. What does that mean? Doesn't mean it was gravity free. It just means there was so much it was impossible to accurately weigh it all. Cedar trees in abundance for the Zidonians, and they of Tyre brought much cedar wood to David. And David said, Solomon my son is young and tender, and the house that is to be builded for the Lord must be exceeding magnificent of fame and glory throughout all countries. I will therefore now make preparation. So David prepared abundantly before his death. Okay? So that David made preparation. Look down to verse 14. Now behold, in my trouble, I have prepared for the house of the Lord 100,000 talents of gold and 1,000 talents of silver and of brass and iron without weight, for it is in abundance, timber and stone. If David had done all of that, why did Solomon need to contract with Hiram, king of Tyre, to get more cedar and fir? I don't know, but he did. I guess he decided they needed to touch it up a little bit more. Verse 15, moreover, there are workmen with thee in abundance, hewers and workers of stone and timber, and all manner of cunning men for every work. Now, that is a total offering. I want you to see David's personal offering. Turn over to 1 Chronicles 29. 1 Chronicles 29. Furthermore, David the king said unto all the congregation, Solomon my son, whom alone God hath chosen, is yet young. This is a public statement by David at very near the end of his life. Solomon is yet young and tender, and the work is great, but the palace is not for man, but for the Lord. Verse 2, now I have prepared with all my might for the house of my God, the gold for things to be made of gold, silver for things of silver, brass for things of brass, iron for things of iron, wood for things of wood, onyx stones and stones to be set, glistering stones of diverse colors, and all manner of precious stones and marble stones in abundance. Okay, they didn't need Home Depot. You know, David had prepared everything they would need. Now, verse 3, moreover, because I've set my affection to the house of my God, I have of mine own proper good. So what's the distinction David's making here? Every time they would conquer an enemy, the spoils of war became their property, but the king or the leadership decided how that got divvied up. There would be portions of that that would be set aside for the house of God and portions of that that would be divided out to the soldiers and the captains and so forth. But here what David's saying is, I have of mine own proper good, meaning of the king's portion. This was his personal income. David said, of my own personal income, I've made offerings. Not just as the king, I made sure that the portion was set aside, but David said, because my heart was set on it. Isn't that what the New Testament says? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He says, because I've set my affection to the house of my God, I have of mine own proper good of gold and silver, which I've given to the house of my God, over and above all that I've prepared. even 3,000 talents of gold, the gold of Ophir, which in that day was the highest quality available, 7,000 talents of refined silver to overlay the walls of the houses withal. All right, now, I did the calculations. Okay, I'll give you the simplified version. But how much is a talent in our weight today? Depending on which Bible dictionary or Bible encyclopedia you look at, you're going to get multiple definitions. But the medium point is about 75 or 80 pounds. Okay, so I ran these calculations at 80 pounds, our weight. How is gold sold today? By the ounce or maybe the troy ounce. Okay, bulk is sold by the kilogram. Okay, one talent is 80 pounds. Okay, so 3,000 talents is 120 tons. 120 tons of gold. Now, gold fluctuates, as you know. This morning, on the site where I looked it up, that's a bulk, you know, gold and silver dealer, gold is going for about almost $1,900 an ounce. Okay, today, in today's gold market, 120 tons is $6.6 billion with a B. Now, that wasn't the national offering. That was David's personal offering. $6 billion in gold. David said here he gave 7,000 talents of silver. That's 280 tons of silver, which is right in today's market, that right now, that'd be $200 million in silver. Now, notice with me, verse 6. Then the chief of the fathers and the princes of the tribes of Israel and the captains of thousands and hundreds with the rulers of the king's work offered willingly. Now you have the prince's offerings. Verse 7, and they gave for the service of the house of God 5,000 talents and 10,000 drams of silver, 10,000 talents, and of brass, 18,000 talents, and 100,000 talents of iron. So David gave $6 billion worth of gold. The people gave another $11 billion, assuming the purity is the same, another $285 million in silver. Okay, now that doesn't count the other 100,000 that David's talked about. It's just, you know, David says, look, this is what I've given. Now maybe these numbers are incorporated in the totals in chapter 22, but just this offering, if you add it together, we're at like $18 billion in today's money. That's incredible to me. Was it worth it? Careful how you answer that question. To David it was. Why? Because he loved the Lord. Okay, and he wanted the house of God to be as valuable as it could. Now, Judas's response when Mary broke the alabaster box of ointment? If I could paraphrase it, he said, wow, that was a waste. And Jesus said, no, it wasn't. His priorities were different, right? But to David, this was not too lavish, too expensive, too extravagant. Now, I'm not saying we ought to overlay our church building with gold. That's not the point. This was a national house. Everybody was supposed to come to that one house of worship. This was intended to last for centuries. Okay? There's a lot of differences. But the point that I am trying to drive home is this. David gave that kind of offering without having his arm twisted, because that's where his heart was. David's called the man after God's own heart. He loved God, even though he was not perfect. His sins are recorded in the Bible as well. David loved God, and which is why he was willing to do that and thought it was a good thing. I think that's why David was entrusted by God with $6 billion worth of gold, don't you? Maybe he hasn't given it to you or me because we might not spend it on the same things. Now, that wasn't all of David's wealth. But in comparison, David lived, for a king, David lived modestly and invested heavily in the house of God. Solomon built the house of God, but Solomon himself lived lavishly. Okay, that'll be the contrast between David and Solomon. But the amount of, 100,000 talents, that's 8 million pounds, if I did the math correctly. If I didn't, somebody will tell me afterwards. All right, of iron and brass. It's unbelievable the amount of building materials that were amassed here. Why? Because God was worth it. Now, ultimately, who provided it? God did. But I'm spending some time on this with Solomon because this is probably the thing for which Solomon is best known. Other than his wisdom, you got Solomon's temple. That was a tremendous work. David wanted to do it. God said, no, Solomon's going to do it. The time of it, if you want to flip back to 1 Kings chapter 6, we'll close with this. 1 Kings chapter 6, the last couple of verses, verse 37, in the fourth year was the foundation of the house laid in the month Ziph, verse 38, and in the 11th year in the month Bul, which is the eighth month, was the house finished throughout all the parts thereof, and according to all the fashion of it. So was he 7 years in building it. So Solomon started in the fourth year, you know, finished in, you know, his 11th year, but it took 7 years. So the first 10 years, roughly, were involved in this project. That was 25% of Solomon's entire time of being king. But he built the house of God. Now, some of these images hopefully help us to have a little bit of an idea of some of the descriptions we're given in Revelation and other places about new heaven, new earth, new Jerusalem, and things that are just, quite frankly, beyond how we live. But that is the greatness of our God. That's the majesty of our God. You know, when we close in prayer and we address our God, it's the same God for whom Solomon built this house. Okay? It's the same God that provided all of this, that blessed Israel and judged Israel. And our God is just as magnificent today and just as worthy today as he was in the day of Solomon. Let's close in word of prayer.